The Precinct Omega Weekly Podcast is supported by Horizon Wars Zero Dark, sci-fi skirmish war games in a fallen earth. Visit Wargame Vault at wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
A quick disclaimer before we start this episode. In this episode, I'm going to talk about matters of law and international trade. My opinions are based on several weeks of extensive and very, very dull research, but I am by no means a qualified tax expert or legal advisor. If your business is going to take action based on anything that follows, you should seek out expert advice first. It's Friday, the 12th of February. My name is Roby Jenkins. I want to start by offering my sincere apologies for the contents of this week's news podcast, and I apologise on two counts. First, some might argue that this week's topic isn't news, but as it's definitely not design discussion and it definitely needs to be talked about, it's going in here. Second, a lot of folks will say that this topic is incredibly dull. All I can say is that I hope I will make it as relevant, compelling, and interesting as humanly possible. Because we're going to talk about the recent changes to the import-export regime in the UK, why this has resulted to changes to how Wargames products are shipped into and out of the UK, what this means for individual Wargamers, and what it means to Wargames manufacturers and retailers of all kinds. If you're a Wargamer who only ever buys products from manufacturers or retailers who are based in your home country, this isn't really going to affect you. It might explain why some prices may go up, but the overall context is irrelevant. However, if, like the vast majority of mature Wargamers, you often purchase products from outside your home country, then there's a good chance that you buy products from the UK. Or, if you're in the UK, that you buy them from outside. Or you buy them from the EU. So, buckle up and pay attention because, one, this stuff is important, and two, I have listened to some very, very dull webinars to extract this information and you will respect my pain.
Stand by for incoming intelligence.
In January 2021, two important things happened that weren't related to COVID-19 or Donald Trump. First, the UK finally separated from the European Union. Second, something called the LVCR was ended by the UK, 7 months ahead of the same thing happening in the EU. So, although this news is technically a few weeks late, it's taken me this long to process what it really means, and importantly, what it doesn't mean. But before we can really unpack it, we need to talk about a few technical terms. First, let's talk VAT. Value-added tax is a tax on non-essential goods and services. It's a way for governments to raise revenue based on the levels of consumption by its population of items not considered essential to everyday life. Now, there's a lot of controversy about what should and shouldn't count as essential, and that's a rabbit hole I don't plan on descending, but it's important to note that VAT exists all over the world and is set at different rates on different goods by every country. And that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that VAT is supposed to be an indirect tax, one that's levied on the consumer by the business that sells them the goods and is then paid to the government by the business, not by the consumer. Now, because different countries have different rates of VAT and different rules about what does and doesn't count as essential, this makes it possible to buy goods far more cheaply in one country than in another. A classic example from my childhood was a pair of Nike Air Jordans, which could be bought for about $150 in the US, but could cost £250 in the UK, and given the exchange rate at the time, that meant you could almost buy three pairs of US Air Jordans for one pair of UK Air Jordans. Now, let's talk about import duty, sometimes called customs charges. Customs duty is basically a protectionist measure by a government specifically designed to stop people from buying goods cheaply abroad and importing them back into the country, depriving domestic sellers of that revenue. So let's say you're in the UK and you want a widget X. You can buy a widget X in the UK for £5, including 20% VAT. But a seller in China, where widget X isn't subject to VAT and where labour costs are far lower, can sell the same widget for £2, including free shipping. Ideally, the government would then charge you £3 duty on that widget so that the cost of buying the widget from China is the same as buying it in the UK. But no government can track the respective costs of every single object for sale in the world, so instead, governments categorise goods. In fact, most governments simply use the WTO system for categorising goods. This makes sense. There are thousands of categories. And it helps the process enormously if every country at least works on the same categories. These categories are called commodity codes. Incidentally, if you've fallen asleep, please wake up and pay attention now. War games miniatures, scenery and such like are considered to be, I quote, reduced size, brackets, scale, model assembly kits, with the commodity code 95030030. Phew, okay. That was some technical explanation. And if you want to pause this podcast, hit yourself in the face a few times and go and get a coffee, this is the time to do it, because we're going to go on to look at Brexit, the VAT charging scheme, and how it affects you.
Prepare for Intel analysis.
Are you back? Are you braced for this? Good. So, the first thing to emphasise is that in some respects, very little has actually changed. The structure of our customs services, our respective tax collecting agencies, and the resources they have to dedicate to collecting that tax are basically the same as they ever were. If you've ever ordered goods from the UK to somewhere outside the EU, or if you're in the UK from the US, and you haven't been charged duty or VAT on receipt, you should have been. The reason you weren't wasn't because there were no laws making this a requirement. It was because our customs and tax collecting systems are under-resourced and inefficient. And as a result, tens of millions of shipments every day are ignored for tax because the cost of collecting the tax owed on them would be greater than the amount of tax that would actually be collected. So please keep that firmly in mind. I've been happily buying stuff from the US for years and can count the number of duty charges I've received on two fingers. What has changed, in the first place, is Brexit. This means that countries in the EU, with respect to importing and exporting to and from the UK, are now the same as countries outside the EU. It really is that simple. Sort of. The thing is that while the UK was in the EU, the culture around the controls of imported goods to the UK was casual. Most goods were coming from the EU, and if they weren't, they could have come from the EU, and this culture was underlined by the LVCR. This is low value consignment relief. Basically, this was an arrangement across the EU that parcels with a stated value of less than €150 would be exempt from any charges. It kept international consumer transactions pleasingly high, whilst mostly not affecting the more lucrative and important B2B, that is, business-to-business transactions. However, LVCR was, to absolutely no one's surprise, flagrantly abused by sellers outside the EU. The usual culprit is China, but they were far from alone. And these sellers shipped goods with a nominal value of less than €150 into the EU, avoiding VAT and duty on consignments whose actual value was often much, much higher. And because of the relatively lax inspection regime on consignments covered by LVCR, It was also an easy way for illegal and controlled goods to be shipped in conventional shipping routes, including ivory, diamonds, weapons, and controlled and illegal drugs. The EU will be ditching LVCR in July 2021, but the UK, not unreasonably, linked its withdrawal from the LVCR scheme to Brexit. And chaos ensued. You see, the problem with LVCR is that it predominantly affects B2C, that is, business-to-consumer sales. B2B sales are really pretty easy. To illustrate that, let's take a look at how I do business with Strato Minis. Before Brexit, companies based in the EU could formally establish a relationship by which goods could be moved between member countries without VAT being charged. Only the final customer would pay the VAT, and that VAT would be earned by government of the country in which the final sale was made. So, Precinct Omega Limited bought goods from Strato Minis without being charged VAT. Precinct Omega customers would then pay VAT on the goods bought, and Precinct Omega would pay that VAT to the UK government. Now, Precinct Omega still buys goods without VAT from Strato Minis. But once those goods arrive in the UK, Precinct Omega Limited owes VAT on the consignment, including the cost of shipping, to the UK government. Precinct Omega customers still pay VAT, and Precinct Omega Limited still pays that VAT to the UK government, but the payment made when the goods arrived it's like a payment on account. So Precinct Omega's quarterly VAT bill is reduced by the amount already paid. Potentially, Precinct Omega could increase its prices fractionally to cover the additional cost of 20% tax on shipping that was previously not subject to VAT, but FYI, I'm not going to do that. It's a marginal cost to me. So as far as B2B transactions go, there's really no change if the businesses involved are both already registered for VAT, as both Precinct Omega and Strato Minis are. Things get trickier in B2B transactions if the recipient party isn't registered for VAT, because this then means that the receiving business will have to pay 20% VAT on receipt and can't recover that from the government. So retail prices of goods will have to increase by 20% to cover the additional cost of importing. So even though registering for VAT isn't mandatory if you have a revenue of less than £85,000 per annum, I would certainly recommend that small businesses that don't want to have to raise their prices register for VAT anyway. If you already use a decent accounting system and have an accountant, the extra costs of a quarterly VAT return are negligible. To summarise, B2B transactions in our industry are marginally more complicated and fractionally more expensive because you pay VAT on shipping. Shipping may take a little longer because you have a VAT bill to pay, but ultimately, not much has really changed. Oh, and a quick important point before we move on. Remember that commodity code I gave you for scale models? The reason that's important is because in the UK at least, items with that commodity code are zero rated for duty. So there should be no customs duty owed on miniatures or scenery imported into the UK. Whether your country rates that commodity code differently, I don't know, but that's why I gave you the code. So you should check. Did you not write it down last time? Okay, here it is again. 95030030. And that's it for B2B transactions. So I'm going to move on in a moment to talk about B2C transactions. If you'd like to punch yourself a few more times or get another stronger coffee, now is your chance. All done? Good stuff. First, let me re-emphasise the point I made earlier about how, despite the change in the rules, the bodies responsible for enforcing those rules are no better resourced than they've ever been. So there's a really good chance that small B2C transactions across borders will still tend to avoid extra fees. The larger the order, the less likely you are to fly under the radar, so bear that in mind. But some companies, particularly in the EU and the US, have recently declared that they won't be shipping to the UK for a while, which raises the inevitable question of why not? And this is nothing to do with Brexit and everything to do with the UK dropping the LCVR. That's important because come July, it will apply to the whole EU. The first issue is that customers in the UK will theoretically have to pay 20% VAT on receipt of goods from outside the UK. As a result, businesses anticipated that they would lose UK sales or see UK sales returned to them for a refund because customers didn't want the 20% VAT bill and either don't place the order or refuse to pay it, resulting in a return. One alternative for external retailers is to not charge VAT at all on the goods. This is completely legal when selling to someone outside your country of sale, but you have to include paperwork with the item showing that it was sold without VAT, and you have to retain evidence that it was sold without VAT for your own tax authorities. This is a major pain in the neck, and the customer will still, theoretically, get a 20% VAT bill on delivery. Another option for external retailers is to register for VAT in the UK and to charge UK customers VAT at the UK rate and to complete a VAT return to the UK government paying a quarterly VAT bill. This is a massive pain in the neck for small value trades, and in any case, who wants to deal with a foreign government's tax system? The risks of getting it wrong far outweigh the benefits. But the final option takes us back to the beginning. Just charge your UK customers the same price you charge everyone else. Pay the VAT to your own government and let your UK customers carry the cost of paying VAT again on receipt. Is there a short-term pain in dealing with returned items? Yes. But there's no pain associated with dealing with non-sales arising from this, and there's an obvious cost to withdrawing even the option to sell to customers who are aware of the potential VAT bill and fully prepared to pay it in return for the opportunity to buy your goods. I think too much has been made of the obstacles and challenges presented by the new VAT regime. Don't get me wrong, these are considerable in some cases. If we were in an industry that involved the movement of controlled goods, livestock, human tissue, or anything subject to customs duty, this would be a massive deal. I was in a webinar with one guy whose whole business was the export of live leeches for medical use, and he was justifiably freaking out about the impact of his sales to the EU, and my deepest sympathies go to that guy and others like him. But the truth is that the impact on our business and our industry is relatively modest, and moreover, might move us to look more innovatively at how we do our business in a way that will be good for international wargaming. So let's take a closer look at that.
Intelligence logged. Analysis confirmed. Applying data.
Okay, so this section usually talks about how the topic of discussion impacts on my own small business by way of illustration and explanation, but although I'm thinking about all of these ideas, I want to emphasise that I am currently following through on none of them. I am more than sufficiently busy enough already, but if there are small businesses out there losing sales and therefore spending less time in packaging, shipping and restocking inventory, then there are some really potent options that could make for a more diverse and interesting miniatures wargames industry over the next few years. First, let's talk about manufacture. An interesting and increasing number of manufacturers, even on a small scale, are using 3D printing to make their masters, which are then prepped and cast for retail. Some literally print every order. Others use traditionally sculpted masters from which resin masters are then made before further casting. All of these could be passed or shipped to a licensee in another country so the products can be manufactured and bought locally. Or, if you want to be really cunning, manufactured in a country with a preferential tax regime to make exporting from there more cost efficient. The owners of the designs can either charge a fixed license fee or a royalty on each sale. Foreground is already doing this with laser cut designs that they license from all over the world and manufacture in the UK, paying royalties to the designers. Cooperatives, combining printers, casters and retailers, could import and license designs from a wide range of external property owners. Now, it should be said that VAT is still owed on digital transactions and imports, but these are one-off costs a fraction of the size of the same VAT on physical imports at scale. For more ambitious domestic manufacturers with access to the necessary technology, whole game systems can be manufactured under license. This has already been done with board games and books for decades, particularly with foreign language editions being printed in the country of the target language. All of this, of course, requires a huge degree of coordination, contractual agreements and/or trust between parties, which can be tricky when dealing with people cross-border, where the precise legal framework can be vague. So, let's talk about something more straightforward: partnership selling. If it becomes too expensive for, say, US retailers to sell directly to the UK, then what they need is a UK-based partner through whom to deal. The partner can make the sales, handle the tax, and ship to customers. The US retailer just needs to send the stuff to the one VAT-registered UK business for them to send it onwards to customers. A good example of this in practice is the business Miniature Heroes, that is effectively a UK-based retailer for Reaper miniatures. Whilst this may entail a small increase in costs to the customers compared to before the new arrangements, they gain, in return, the assurance of dealing with a local seller who carries all the liability for dealing with returns, refunds, replacements, etc. And of course, they don't have to pay VAT or duty on their orders. How the partnership is compensated is the most complicated part of the arrangement, but there are endless options, and I was going to articulate some ideas at this point, but as I got down into the weeds, I realised that there would need to be professional, expert legal advice taken on some of them. So I'm going to ameliorate the risk by just saying, use your imagination. What this all leads to, though, is a greater reliance upon international cooperatives, partnerships, or even small businesses opening wholly owned cross-border subsidiary businesses through whom to manage their international sales. Yes, there are costs associated with these kinds of options, but running a business costs money. But where there are costs, there are opportunities, because not everyone is going to have the will or indeed capital to pursue them. So the handful of entrepreneurs that actually take the chance are going to find themselves at the vanguard of the other options and opportunities that operating professionally in an international market will provide. As far as Precinct Omega goes, though, I have to look back at my business plan. My relationships with international businesses like Strato Minis and Iliada Game Studio are sidelines to my core business of designing and publishing tabletop games. For me, the timing simply isn't right to upend my whole strategic plan in favour of becoming a UK-based clearinghouse for international sellers into the UK. But that doesn't mean I don't see the potential for the idea, and I hope that someone out there will grasp it.
Precognitive function online. Logic engine online. Stand by for predictions.
I don't usually talk about what the topic's going to be in the next week's episode, mostly because most of the time I have no idea. But this time I do. So I'm going to. It's particularly apposite in the context of the episode you've just listened to, because I am not a tax expert or formally qualified to talk about import-export regimes. So the odds are good that I've made some clangers in this week's episode, and I positively invite my listeners, some of whom I know are far more experienced in business leadership than I am, to let me know what mistakes they think I've made. Because next week I'm going to take a look at the feedback I've had on podcasts over the last almost year and share some of the ideas, suggestions, corrections, complaints, and arguments that people have given me. Where I'm wrong, I'll say so. Where I disagree, I'll talk it through. And where it's just a bloody good idea. I'll make sure that credit goes where it deserves to. So if you've got episodes you've been meaning to listen to, go listen, get your comments in. You can post them on Podbean, email them to me at precinctomega@gmail.com, or if you're a Patreon supporter, you can post them on the episode thread on Patreon. Finally, don't forget that I live stream every Friday afternoon from 1400 to 1500 UTC on Facebook. You can join me and join in the comments, or you can watch past videos on my Facebook page. Just search for Precinct Omega on Facebook. As always, thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you again next week.
The Precinct Omega Game Design Podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega to help us continue developing new games and creating hobby content for wargames enthusiasts all over the world.